This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Heward, not exactly Joe Capp there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Goldsmith going to join us in 30 minutes, and then we've got Ranked coming up right after that. Mariners on a roll as they win another series and go for the sweep today against Atlanta. Man, they went all out to win that game last night. Munoz with the five-out save. Yeah, they wanted to make sure they won the series last night, and whatever happens today is gravy, which is great. In the meantime, Brock, you got...
Before we get to rookie minicamp, I know I'm going to take over the show. Occasionally, the co-pilot's got to step in here when the pilot uses the bathroom.
Apparently.
All right. Just two quick things here. Dollars to donuts. Do you think you can still use that term, dollars to donuts? Because now donuts, you can't even get a donut anywhere for less than a dollar.
Like, Brock, I got a donut. I got Heather a donut the other day from a fancy donut shop. I will not give its name.
$4.
Four? I got a donut the other day from a fancy donut shop. We were out. Justin Amore and I were out running around. We were at Simply Seattle, and there's a donut shop nearby that I know Heather likes.
Okay.
So I was like, hey, I'm going to go in and get my wife a donut.
Right.
Because I know she likes this place. In fact, I texted her and she didn't see the text. And you know what I did? I went in and I got her a donut.
You did it anyway. Yeah.
That donut cost more than $6.
Right.
For a donut. It's a fancy donut. This is not like just a plain donut.
And it's not like it's a maple bar. It's not a glazed donut. Like, there's more to that.
There's more to
it. Yeah.
But Justin.
But it's a single individual pastry.
It's a single individual donut that is more than $6. Yeah.
So as a middle-aged dad, I'm just asking you to get rid of
You want me to stop donuts. Saying dollars to donuts?
It's just a thing of the past. It's
like
a relic
phrase,
of the past.
Though. It's a good one. I like that phrase.
It is a good one.
I'll bet you dollars to donuts.
Oh, really? Which one do I get to choose? Because there's a bunch of dollars now in that donut.
Yeah. A lot of people on the text line, by the way, guessing exactly where I went for get that donut.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And they're probably right.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh, they're probably right. The second thing.
Like a major dolphin.
And this will lead to the football one. This will lead to the mini camp conversation that you have scheduled and want to talk about. I would be really curious, maybe after the season, I'll bug Cal and say, how many game plans do you go in? Kind of like a script in football, Salk. You have your first 15 plays that most coaches script. How many times does the game plan going in stay the same versus just rip it up and start all over?
Mm.
You know, how many different times over the course of the season? And I'm going to guess with the guys going the way they're going right now, with the stuff and the command that they've got going, that maybe it is sticking to plan because it is just so electric. Or maybe it's not, and you're making these adjustments, and these teams are like, I'll never forget, and I'm sorry, quick little story time, I'll never forget in Indianapolis when it was like, why do we even watch tape? Nobody plays us the same way that they show. Everybody rolls over the top of Marvin. Mm. I don't care what their tendencies say. I don't care what their coverage is. They won't play a man. So why do we spend all this time watching all this tape when nobody plays us? Chip Kelly would say the same thing in Oregon. Like, it's pointless. Nobody's going to play us the way they play everybody else. And yeah, just curious with the way these guys are going right now, their opponents certainly do not have any answers. So
I think it's well said. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Now go ahead. Back to regular season.
I don't know if we have enough time for it. So you want another, I'll give you another story then, since I don't know if we have time for
like dollars to donuts or what?
So I take a lot of abuse. Would you agree that I take a lot of grief and that for the most part, I feel like I handle it pretty well. I get a lot of grief from the text line. I get a lot of grief online on the social media. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of grief from you three Jamokes, especially Moore, who's not even here.
And I'd say 10 years ago, a lot of it was self-induced.
Right.
A lot more than it is now. Like in your 30s, there were some rough years.
Yes, I feel like I don't even induce it anymore. Now it just
kind of you kind of brought it upon yourself.
Well, it helped for a long time having Howdy here because he took a lot of the abuse away. And then Wassel was here, and a lot of people were more mad at him than me.
Yes.
So like it was easier when some of those guys are around. Now it's Moore, who's everybody's golden child. So it's like
Justin the nicest guy ever.
Justin's so nice, and Moore is wonderful, and Brock's the king of Puyallup. So if I have to be mad at somebody, it's bad East Coast carpetbagger. So like I get it, and I don't mind. And honestly, like I feel like for the most part, a pretty thick skin about it all, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think I handle it pretty well?
Way better in your 40s.
Okay.
Yes.
And so understand that it doesn't, it's not just here. All of my friends give me a fair amount of grief. And of course, my family gives me grief as well, but sure. I deal with it. I understand. Yeah. I told you, my mom gave me some prickly pear jam for my birthday because she said it's for my son who's prickly on the outside, but sweet on the inside, which I thought was nice-ish. So that's kind of like my life. Uh-huh. But I feel like what happened yesterday might have actually gotten to a point where I was like really insulted as opposed to just like, okay, whatever, move on.
What happened yesterday?
Well, so I went to the dermatologist, okay? And my dermatologist, I've seen one dermatologist forever. Occasionally I get these like rosacea stuff on my face and stuff like that. So I'll go to the, it's like almost like eczema, right? So I'll go to the dermatologist. I've been seeing this person forever and they're no longer seeing medical clients because there's so much money to be made in the cosmetics part of that.
Right.
Okay, fine. So they've got somebody else and they're a PA.
Because there ain't no party like a Botox party.
That's right.
Because a Botox party don't stop.
They're just, I'm sure, rolling in cash doing that.
Don't move.
Yeah. Okay. So I get there to see either a physician's assistant or a nurse practitioner. I'm not sure
what she is.
Or a
volunteer. Yeah.
No, I mean, like, it's just that. It was fine. Yeah. I get no problem. I get it. I knew what I was getting in. That's fine.
And you liked your dermatologist.
I did like her, and I got to see her from a distance when I went in yesterday, but I did not. Anyway,
okay, so dollars to Botox.
So I've got these like bumps on the inside of my forearms, right? And like they're like little itchy bumps, and you know they're going to go away, but eventually, you got to get the right cream for them, right? So they can put on the topical solution, and this, as it turns out, required a topical steroid, which I got to go pick up today, so don't test me here in the next few weeks, because I may be stronger than expected. I had to wait until after the race, obviously, because I didn't want anybody to accuse me of any performance-enhancing drugs.
Doping.
So I go in, and the woman comes in, the doctor comes in, and she said, okay, what's going on? I said, well, I've been having these bumps on my arm. She takes a look at them. She goes, looks me over and says, before we get to the bumps on the arm.
Oh, boy.
Do you notice that you're having this thing on your nose where it's sort of hardening and it's getting this? I was like, excuse me? She's like, hey, it's not related, but if it's something you ever want to take care of, it's something we can do. So I'm thinking to myself,
Should I take care of it?
Did I basically just walk into the doctor to help with a little rash on my forearm? And her response was, man, you're getting pretty ugly. Is there something you'd like to do about that? We can help.
Yeah, because this isn't a car where it's like, I know you want us to change your tires, but your brakes are about to go.
Right,
those are going
like,
out.
Okay, that's basically what it was, but it was more like,
your looks.
Hey, I know you came in here because your tires are about to go, or I got a flat tire, but this car's super ugly. Have you thought about a paint job? Because this is hideous. I can't believe you went with this. Plus, this car is, this woman just flat out said I was ugly. And I was like, okay, well, I'm here for my arms. If you don't mind just kind of giving me the right cream for my forearms, that would be great. I can get somebody else on my text machine to tell me I'm ugly. I don't need you. I have social media. What do I need a doctor for? So anyway, that was my day yesterday. I went to the doctor for my arms. And I ended up being told that my nose was ugly. Like, I don't already know I have an ugly nose. Like, I haven't lived with this nose since I was a kid. Yes, it's too big. I get it. It's large. It's got a little, like, thing in it. I know. It's not perfect. I felt like the woman was insinuating that I look like Ted Kennedy. And I was not at all happy about it.
Just wanted to make sure people feel appropriately sorry for you.
Anyway, that's what I got.
Maybe you are a prickly pear.
Maybe I am.
Yeah.
But I feel like I didn't do anything. All I did was go in for, like, right. I didn't, like, antagonize the nurse practitioner. All I said was, I have an issue with my arms. Could you help me with it? Mm-hmm. And her response was, you're hideously ugly. Your nose looks like bulbous, like Ted Kennedy's.
Give me $10,000 more dollars.
You know what
I'll
I was thinking of, Brock? I was thinking of the guy in Braveheart. Not the king, but Robert the Bruce's father with his nose that's all like got like seven sections to it. Like, is that what I assume now that I look like? Is the guy from Braveheart. Exactly. Like, geez. Anyway, that was my day. Sorry. We were going to talk about minicamp. We'll give you everything you need to know.
I think this is a time we tell him he's handsome.
Thank you.
And you are good.
Couldn't somebody just say I'm
good
looking for a chance?
You are.
Thank you.
Yes.
Couldn't somebody just like build me up a little bit instead of the doctor telling me that I'm ugly?
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. up first.
From 6-10 to 11-3, that's the way the season has gone now for the Mariners as they win another series yesterday to stay in first place by full game over Texas. It was Luis Castillo putting on a show for the first seven innings. He was phenomenal yesterday.
Castillo trying to put a capper on this one, the 1-2. Swinging a fly ball, lazy hit. More of a pop fly into shallow right field. Polanco is there, and he makes the squeeze for out number three. Luis Castillo flexes as he walks off the mound. He has flat out handed it to the Braves tonight. Three hits over seven scoreless innings.
Yeah, I think we actually didn't even talk about it enough today, Brock, what he did to that lineup last night. Pretty insane.
Yeah, it was one thing to do it to the Rockies over seven innings in the same way and just mow them down on a cold, frigid night there where they played and the Rockies, you felt like, had no chance.
Mm-hmm.
It's Atlanta Braves.
Yeah.
I mean, these are World Series winners a couple years ago. This is best record in baseball. They hadn't lost back-to-back games all season long the entire month of April until they came into this house.
Yeah, he was.
And so they had to deal with this staff and these pitchers and this kind of heat, and they could not catch up to it.
You know, the four-seam fastball from the slot he throws at is just such an effective. It's so hard to hit that pitch, and especially when the velocity is at 95, 96, or even 97 miles an hour. It's so different than anybody else. So, but he's got to have the slider, the changeup, the two-seam. It all kind of works together, but that's the pitch that's really been a separator. And against certain clubs, it's a really good matchup. You know, he can go at the top of the strike zone, and he gets great results there.
Yeah, and as Cal said, man, that arm slot, right? I mean, just the different arm slots that these guys bring you night in and night out. You can look at the paper, right? You can look at the film, and I'm sure these hitters, Salk, they watch all that video. They got all that prep. You can take your little extract machine and go ahead and put the hologram of Luis up there. But once you see it in person, mm-hmm. and once you see that three-quarter slot and that ball moving the way that it moves at 97 miles an hour, good luck.
Yeah, it was a pretty good game last night, and I love the way Scott managed it. Ryan Stanek comes in. You're the victim of, what, a couple of really bad defensive play, unfortunately, by Polanco. And now all of a sudden you got a couple runners on base with one out. What does he do? He goes to Munoz with one out in the eighth, and instead he gets all five outs necessary to make sure you lock down that game. That's what they needed to win that game, ensure the series win, and whatever happens today is gravy. And it's a tough one. Look, day game today, you're going to have Emerson Hancock on the hill against Chris Sale. The odds are probably not in your favor, right, going up against this roster three straight days. So make sure you win two of them. And if you can find a way to steal today's game, that goes on your ledger and the one you right one you got that you weren't necessarily supposed to.
And by the way, a little tertiary benefit, I think, at times. This has been on a few occasions now for Emerson. Nothing to lose.
Right.
Right. I mean, in some ways, you got everything to lose because Brian Woo's sitting in that dugout chomping at the bit, ready to go, and has put together a couple excellent rehab starts. And after one more, we'll probably get that shot. But if you're Emerson, like, I got nothing to lose. Let me just go out here and continue to deal and be the fifth wheel here that has been a significant contributor this month of April as well.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, here's a moment or two on the Seahawks rookie minicamp, which will start shortly. I like this event. I do. It's fun seeing that group come together for the first time. Did they have that when you were playing, Brock? Did they have a rookie minicamp like that?
Yeah, they did.
And what is that like just from a like bonding perspective for that class?
Yeah, ours was a little more in training camp. It wasn't a minicamp like this. Oh, my gosh. I wish there was a rookie minicamp that I could have got there and actually felt good about myself before just jumping right into the fold and being humiliated and humbled and just like eating humble pie. Like, wow, this is so fast. I don't even know if I can do this. This game moves so fast. So I think there's some wisdom in it, you know, and oh, by the way, some pretty cool bonding for your rookies too. Like they all get together and it's not just your eight draft picks. It's all the undrafted guys. There's rookie camp invites. Going to be guys that are hoping to catch their eye, like Talia Tungavailoa, that, you know, hopes to catch on. So no, it is a pretty cool experience that wasn't around last century.
All right, those are two things you need to know. Let me give you a third.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
You guys are mean. You guys are really mean. These texts are out of control. As a longtime listener, Salk, I can definitely say you have thick skin, especially on your nose. There are multiple texters who think that I have leprosy. I'm not a leper. I did not escape the leper colony. That's not true. That's not nice. Salk, LOL. It's not just Seattle that doesn't like you. I live in Dallas, and I've lived there for most of my life. I've met a lot of people from Seattle, and you're right. No one likes you. I tell them I listen to your show religiously, and they look at me like I have three heads.
It's unbelievable. Salk needs a hug. Someone hug him.
How about this one from the 206? This is a perfect example of how you're bringing this on yourself by making up a dramatic story when her intent probably wasn't at all what you're implying. She's the skin doctor and just offering you advice on a skin issue. You know what? We're done here. That's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here.
I'm good enough.
Thank you.
I'm smart enough.
Uh-huh, Stuart.
And doggone it, people like me.
Thank you, Stuart Smalley. I appreciate that. I need that every once in a while.
Whenever you need it.
Harrison Spokane says they let you out of the leper colony. You know, again, that's really, really not nice. Salk, you're so handsome, except for your backyard, your nose, and your height. I mean, it's just nonstop. It's nonstop, man.
When is a Tom Brady roast? When are they doing that? Is that this weekend?
I hope he's up for it. I hope he knows what this is like.
You have to deal with it every day on that text line.
Yeah.
It's not right.
Salk's doctor is the real hero. Just saying what we've all been thinking, but too scared to tell him. Unbelievable.
Salk, I can say in full, and you know this, I'm a pretty genuine person.
Yeah.
I have never looked at your nose and thought there's any issue with it. Is it a little
nice
large?
Of you to
sure.
Say.
It's yeah. a little large.
Sure. Yeah.
But I never looked at it. You look at some noses and you're like, whoa.
Right.
That's a whiskey nose.
Yes.
I mean, that thing looks like it drinks the whiskey, right? Like it is a.
Like someone's just pouring the whiskey straight through the nostrils.
Through the nose.
Yeah.
And that's why through it's bulbous port. And red right. and veiny and just.
This is not nice at all.
No.
And then let's just wrap this one up before we talk to Aaron Goldsmith with his perfect hair and, you know, alabaster skin and everything else in a couple of
great
minutes.
Voice, great smile.
Matt in Oregon, of course, weighing in that says it's only fun giving Salk a hard time because he lets it roll off his hairy shoulders. You know, that's really like, does everything have to come with a barb right at the end? Aaron Goldsmith is next. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
You're listening to Brock and Salk,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
All right, Aaron Goldsmith going to join us here in just a moment or two. As we wrap up a Brock and Salk show, we got Ranked coming up here in 15 minutes. Team's on a nice little run here, man, and it is a good lesson on why we talk about it being early and Scott being patient. And guess what? It's still early now. It's why we're not talking about this as being a surefire playoff team. It means they're playing good ball right now after playing some lousy ball to start the season. We'll see where it goes from here. Aaron's seen quite a bit of it, and he joins us right now. Good morning, Mr. Goldsmith. How are you?
Hey, good morning, fellas. Doing well. How about yourself?
We're doing great. It's fun when a team plays like this and just you kind of wake up day after day knowing that the starting pitching is going to give you a shot to win a game. What's it like calling games like this day after day?
Well, you start to form some pretty unrealistic expectations if you're not careful. I mean, it's like nothing I've ever seen before. It's like nothing no Mariner fan has ever seen, at least in franchise history. Maybe you've seen it from afar with another team. But it is remarkable. And I think we all need to realize what we're watching is maybe once in a lifetime for all of us. I mean, it certainly hasn't happened to date until now. And to really appreciate it, enjoy it while it's happening, this is an elite pitching staff, even if they hadn't gone on this type of run, and they will continue to be great whenever this current stretch is over with. But what they're doing right now is truly exceptional and like something that the game has really kind of rarely seen in its history.
Do you have a favorite in there, a favorite performance, a favorite moment, a favorite inning or anything like that, that just really jumped out to you from these last 18 games?
Absolutely. I thought George Kirby's first inning in his most recent start against Arizona was the single most dominant inning by a Mariners pitcher this year. When you can rear back and throw gas right over the plate and have not the bottom of the order, the top of the order, not be able to catch up to it and just throw heater after heater after heater. And they're not it wasn't like the Kirby version where we see him dot the edges and guys take pitches they think they hope might be called a ball just a touch off the plate. He was right over the dish. I mean, nearly center cut with the best fastball we've seen from him this year. And the numbers bore it out, right? I mean, he ended up striking out a career-high 12. He had more swing and miss on his four-seam fastball that day than any pitcher in baseball has on that pitch year-to-date. It was electric. And it just kind of goes to show you, even from a pitching standpoint, it does take a little bit of time. We hadn't seen that type of giddy-up on his fastball at that point until that start. And guys are now getting through the rotation four or five times and starting to loosen up a little bit more, even though the weather isn't always great. And that, to me, was the single most dominant inning by a Mariner starter this year.
Aaron, what are some of the things your broadcast peers say when they come into town, come into a series? You know, I'm just kind of curious, either play-by-play or the color guys that you guys bump into in the food line and around the batting cages, what do they have to say about this staff?
You know, I was talking last night with CJ Nikowski, who is the analyst on TV for the Braves. He had been the analyst with the Rangers for some time before that. So he's very familiar with watching the Mariners in this recent run of pitching over the last few years. And CJ is a former big league pitcher, was a former first round draft pick, had a nice career in the big leagues. And I asked him, what comes to mind when you think about Mariners pitching in this recent years of whatever it might be, 3-year stretch run? And he said, well, the most obvious thing is just their ability to throw strikes, which seems like this very obvious thing, right? I think the casual fan, if you're talking about a major league pitcher, a big league pitcher, well, of course they can throw strikes. That's the name of the game. But as he put it, that was a challenge for him in his career. And it sounds simple, and it's much harder in actuality. And the way that the Mariners weaponize their pitchers with confidence to say, just throw it over the plate, let it move, and know that the odds are in your favor. And the Mariners' abilities, whether it's you're talking about a starting pitcher or a reliever, to get ahead has been pretty amazing this year. And that's coming from an organization where we've seen like kind of historic success in that department in recent years. The Mariners pride themselves on the 0-0 pitch, so the first pitch of an at-bat, and the 1-1. When you win the 0-0 and you win the 1-1, things shift in your favor dramatically, and that's what we've seen this year.
It's interesting, the question you focused on with the Kirby answer, which I would completely agree with. You could probably do that for each of the pitchers and try to come up with a moment. And the one that has stuck out to me, and maybe it's even two, were the last two times out, Luis Castillo, after I think the first time it was 5, this time it was 6. Like, do you want to use him for one more? He's up in and around 90 pitches. Do you want to give him another inning? Both times Scott did, and both times he was so economical with that final inning to just be like, yeah, I'm going to make it through another inning. That's just what I do. It strikes me that that is a whole nother gear that comes with age and experience for some of these pitchers.
Yeah, yes, you bring that up. And last night, Gary and I, when we went to break after the bottom of the 6th, and you know, Scott had Stanek and he had Spire warming up. So he's got his leverage arms rolling and ready to go if need be. And here comes Castillo trotting back out there. And I'm looking up his season high, which was in the neighborhood of like 104 pitches. And I think he was right around 90 at that point. And you're thinking, okay, like he could have a 3-batter, 10-pitch inning, get to call it 100 pitches and hang zeros over 7. And that's exactly what he did. And I do think there's something, some intangible that you can't measure to a guy who's been around, who has the hardware like Castillo and has the supreme confidence that they just smell the finish line. And to me, I always kind of acknowledge that when I see guys, when you know it's their last couple of batters, maybe even their last batter, When you see their velo spike at the very end, you know, maybe they've been sitting 95 for the last few innings, then all of a sudden you see a 96 or a 97 pop. But they know that they're right there. They're going to empty the tank with everything they have. And we saw it from Castillo again last night. The ability to finish is something, one of those probably numerous qualities that defines an ace, and Castillo certainly has that.
Yeah, Brock, as a sprinter myself, I totally understand that. And when you get kind of, when you start to smell the finish line in a race, that's when you start to really turn things on. And you got to be careful because you don't want to, you know, get hurt during those moments.
Sure.
But as a sprinter myself, I totally get what Aaron's talking about.
I think every sprinter out there does. I think they totally get that. Hey, Aaron, is there a tangible or intangible measurement for Cal's role with all of this pitching?
Well, first of all, there isn't a wheelchair waiting at the dugout steps for Castillo like there is for Salk.
Oh, my poor hamstring. It's so sad.
It is very sad. You know, I was thinking about that the other day because it's another thing that you can't measure, right? Cal's impact on this pitching staff. But you can't tell me that a pitching staff that has been among the very elite, not just this year, but for some time, but clearly we're seeing even a special version of it currently. You can't tell me that the guy behind the plate doesn't have an impact on that. And I don't think either one of you are trying to make that case. You're making the opposite. And I agree with that. His ability to instill the confidence to stick with the game plan, which is really, it sounds like an easy thing. Like, hey, Brock, okay, pitcher and catcher meeting. Let's go over things. This is the game plan. You would think it'd be easy just to, okay, well, this is what we talked about, so this is what we're going to do. But the ability to stick with that and execute it is something that is valued highly by Mariners. There's a lot of manpower that goes into that. And then I would say, conversely to that, I mean, take Kirby's outing the other night. His fastball was alive. You know, was it their plan for him to throw nothing but heaters, or Bryce Miller, who threw nothing but fastballs in the first inning the other night? Like, I don't think that was the plan. My guess. I don't know. That's my guess. But based on what Cal saw, it's like, you know, we're going to stick with this. We're going to ride the hot hand until they prove otherwise. He's very mature beyond his years. We know his value to the coaching staff and the pitching staff, but it's not something you can put on a spreadsheet. So it's harder to quantify. But he's an integral part in what the Mariners are doing up on the mound. There's no question.
A little chat with Aaron Goldsmith here this morning. On the other side of things is this offense that it hasn't been terrible, but it certainly hasn't been what it's supposed to be. It's kind of surviving, and you and I have talked about this both on and off the air, right, in terms of, hey, when you can take a few walks and hit a couple home runs, the strikeouts maybe don't look as serious. But at some point, like, when are we going to see this offense start to at least just look like it was designed to look?
The pitching has covered up a lot with the lineup so far this year, and it is kind of in kind of scratch and fight and claw mode right now. And it looked like they were coming out of it, right? They drew so many walks beginning with the last homestand that really kind of offset the strikeouts, and the strikeouts were reduced in that kind of window of time, but we're seeing them spike again. I mean, right now, you have three regulars, maybe four in your lineup that are riding like a 30% strikeout rate. Now, you don't notice it as much with Cal because, so what you just said, Mike, he's hit six bombs, right? But you notice it more with Garver. You notice it more with Polanco. You know, Julio's in that neighborhood as well, and he has one home run, obviously. I don't know. I asked Jerry about this the other day because I think it's important to have realistic expectations. Obviously, the Mariners put great time, energy, and resources in overhauling the lineup to avoid what is happening currently, which is frustrating. The Mariners were essentially the worst strikeout team in baseball last year. So what's the realistic hope? They're not going to go from the worst to the best in 1 year. That's just not going to happen. But the Mariners' hope is that it starts to slowly trickle to more of the middle. And they've obviously hurt their chances with that, with a month of being the easiest team to strike out in baseball. My belief on it is this. The Mariners starting pitchers, for example, they won't continue this level of elite dominance forever. It's physically impossible. In fact, the fact that they've done it to this level is already amazing. And on the opposite side of that coin, I believe that the names that I mentioned offensively won't be at this type of a strikeout rate, for example, forever, right? Like, everything's going to come to the mean at some point. And so I have a hard time thinking that, let's take Polanco and Garver, for example, that they're going to post the worst, like the outlier worst strikeout seasons of their career together this year for the Mariners. Now, could it happen? Yeah, anything can happen. But I don't think it will. And the process to get there is inside that clubhouse. And I know they're banging their head against the wall every day trying to figure it out because they're more of aware of it than any of us are. That's for sure. But it's got to change because they aren't hitting. I don't think they can hit enough home runs realistically to offset the number of strikeouts that they're currently on pace for.
What were the Vegas odds leaving spring training that Josh Rojas would lead the team with a 938 OPS in the month of April?
You know, Rojas has really opened up this year compared to when he came over last year. Like, it's a different guy. And I think we saw that, and you saw the emotion he had after those two leadoff home runs that he bookended the Arizona series with. Now, I'll chalk some of that to he's playing his former team, right? It's the Rojas Revenge Tour. So it does feel different, I'd have to imagine, when you do that against the club that traded you roughly 6 months ago or whatever it might have been. But when the Mariners made that trade with Arizona, Rojas held the deal up. That deal could have been executed, from what I've been told, significantly sooner had the Diamondbacks been willing to give up Rojas earlier. The Mariners were bullish. Like, we're not making this deal. We want Canzone. We want Bliss. But we also want Rojas. And if he's not in the deal won't happen. And the Diamondbacks finally gave in and included Rojas. The Mariners love his makeup. They love his presence in the clubhouse. They love the person, and they love the player. He's just been a steady player, by and large, over the course of his career with versatility. And we've seen him at second. We've seen him at third. And now he's the couple of balls he hit against Arizona, I don't think he could hit a ball any better than that. They've needed him. They've needed him immensely. And thank goodness he's been able to fill the void at the top of the order against righties, and his production has been noticeable given the struggles by some others.
All right, last thing, and then we'll let you go, but and I hate to end it on this, but it's just so freaking important, and that is Julio. What is an expectation here for Julio, given that this just doesn't look like the guy that is the leader, the best player, the star of this team? He hasn't been terrible, and thankfully he's used all of his other skills to find ways to help the team. But what is it going to take to see Julio?
I mean, it is. We went through this last year, obviously. It is pretty amazing, if you go glass half full, that a player can be noticeably below expectation and still be a relatively average big league player. Like, that is amazing. For all of us in our normal jobs, we'd be fired if that were the case. But for Julio, it's like, okay, you're not close to what you can be, and yet you're still pretty average, which obviously the expectations for Julio is much greater than that. You know, for me, when I watch him, it's just a lot of ground balls again this year. And fortunately, by and large, he hits the ball hard enough, even when it's on the ground, that it can sneak through. But he hasn't hit the ball especially hard so far this year, certainly relative to what we know he can produce. We just, even when he was hot, right, even when he had that, whatever it was, a 13-some game stretch, you know, he had two barrels, which is like the premium type of contact that will more times than not lead to extra base hits, right? It's hit super hard and on a great trajectory that will lead to banging off the wall or splitting the gap or hopefully leaving the yard. And we obviously saw that in Arlington. But I'm sure that the effort right now is, how do we get Julio to get the ball in the air? When that happens, the offense ignites. And unfortunately, until that happens, the offense just can't be as good as you hope that it would be, because he is just too important, just like Acuña is too important for the Braves. He's just that good of a player when he's right.
Great stuff, as always. Enjoy a little day baseball today, Aaron. We appreciate it, and then have fun on the road. We'll talk to you soon.
Good talking to you guys.
All right, there you go, the great Aaron Goldsmith, and we'll transition from there right into ranked.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwumfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Every morning at 9:45 on Brock and Salk.
Top 10 list. I'm not buying it.
Ranked.
We heard Scott today, Brock, talk about how in the right moment, Luis Castillo's got to be a killer. Got to kill you. Got to put you away when you have the chance. And we've never ranked kills. So kills ranked today. Kills ranked.
You're going to count the kill shot from dermatologist?
Yeah, no kidding. I'm going to count the killers for sure. You like this song, Justin? Right up your alley.
What's
your kind of song?
Not.
No?
Damn.
What's your kind of song?
The song or that band?
Just about.
What?
What?
Rock, it's the Sweet Carolina of my generation.
It really
and
is.
It. Oh.
That's like the meanest thing Justin's ever
said. I can't handle it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Justin on that. We got Killer Mike.
You know, obviously, not a verse of his. Right. He's on the song.
Back. He's on fourth. Yeah. Hit the beat running like Randy Moss. That's a good one.
I love Killer Mike.
He's pretty good. Let's see. We've got View to a Kill, both the movie and the song from it. From Duran Duran. You like this one, Justin?
I don't understand why this music took itself so seriously. It's just silly.
Like the 80s new wave, why it's so serious?
Yeah, it's just so, what's like...
I mean, if you want serious 80s new wave pensive that still involves the word kill, how about Echo and the Bunnymen with the Killing Moon?
I don't hate this song.
I like this song a lot, but it's very serious.
Yeah. Also serious.
Very serious.
Chill out.
Takes itself very seriously. Brock, this one's for you.
And then bounced around professionally for a long time. Did a movie with Burt Reynolds in The Longest Yard. Did a Hawaii 5-0 with Jack Lord. Currently working with Learfield IMG, Associate GM, working with the University of Washington Athletic Program.
That, of course, is...
Who is that?
Sonny Six Killer. Sonny Six Killer. Yeah, you would have gotten that one.
Ah, you're killing me, Smalls.
Thank you, yes. And then there you got Reggie Jackson in Naked Gun.
I must kill the queen.
I must kill the queen. We've got, let's see, Ghostface Killer.
When we hug these mics, we get busy.
I don't know what he's about to say. I'm just turning it off. I'm sure that you've got to find, but I'm going to turn it off anyway.
It's also hard to find. Him and Killer Mike, a little bit tougher.
Let's see. Brock Video killed the radio star from the Buggles. Killing Is My Business and Business Is Good from Megadeth. Bikini Kill. My Life with the Thrill Kill. Killing Joe. Shoot the Thrill, Play to Kill.
Hey, Frank.
Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Frank. Kill Me.
Frank, would you like
Killian's
to kill
Irish Red?
Ranked? Are you on Mora's side where you'd like to see
him? Yeah, I like this thing.
Frank likes
hey.
This. Frank's in.
He's Frank. In?
Yeah, he likes this. Good.
Frank's
yeah.
got that killer instinct in him.
Frank's into engineering. He knows all about kilowatts.
Yes. Brock, have you ever
Can
hiked
you turn?
She's a killer queen. Got that agility.
How quickly can you turn kilometers into miles?
Like in your head?
Kilometers into miles.
Right.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Can you do that?
That'd be hard to do.
Have you ever played the Killer Queen arcade game?
No.
That's one of the greatest.
The Killer Queen?
Killer Queen.
Yeah, like that song I just played. The
greatest arcade game.
Of course, you got Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Oh,
to
yeah.
Kill a Mockingbird.
Movie.
Natural Born Killers.
To Kill a Mockingbird's not top five.
Killers of the Flower Moon, should. Brock. Hard to Kill, Steven Seagal.
Did you get the U2 songs? I know Brock was going to mention
yeah,
it
I did.
Second.
Yeah, Brock being the huge U2 fan that he is. Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me.
Yeah,
I knew he was going to get
that
one.
Sphere.
No, they didn't?
No.
That's surprising. What about Mount Kilimanjaro?
Kilimanjaro?
Yeah.
It's a good mountain.
You ever climb Kilimanjaro?
It's a good mountain.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good mountain.
How about killer whales?
Not top five.
No.
Also known as?
Also known as orcas, obviously. Well, Cecily would be very upset. She loves the orcas.
I think they need to, every once in a while, mix in the killer whale on that little salmon race and just knock them all out. Just kill them.
I think if you knew how expensive idea. Those costumes were, you'd know why that doesn't happen.
That's
I just
idea.
Swallow them up. Just killer whale. They're like the end of it. They're
out.
Coming around and they just, yep, that killer whale just swallows them all up.
30 Seconds to Mars to Kill. Thank you, Isaac.
Oh, that's a good one.
You were never going to play it.
So. That is a good one. All right, you ready? Top five.
DJ Killmore from Incubus. Yep.
Number five.
Killing me softly with his song.
Fugees, maybe the Robert Flack version.
With his song,
how many times was that played from 95 to 99 on UW's campus?
A lot.
I love that song. And people are upset at me because I hate the Killers.
Whatever. You're right. Don't worry about that.
We got a big one that we missed in here that I know is going to make you pretty upset.
What?
A certain Metallica song.
Ooh.
Huh?
Certain Metallica album.
Oh, Kill 'Em All?
Yeah.
It's a great one.
That's
it's a great
cool.
album. All right. Number five was Killing Me Softly. Number four, you're right. I didn't get any Metallica, but I did get some Motley Crue.
She's got the
it's pretty really, good. Really too bad that Vince can't sing anymore. It's very sad.
It was not sustainable.
He really can't sing. That's number four. Number three.
Psycho Killer.
What?
What?
Ahead of a Killer Whale.
Yeah.
Ahead of To Kill a Mockingbird?
That's like a legendary song.
Do you read?
I've read To Kill a Mockingbird. Yeah. Boo Radley. Jeez. I'm on it. They don't read that in school anymore.
425 is going to be pretty upset that we didn't get a certain Batman. Val Kilmer.
Oh, Val Kilmer. Oh,
wow. It's pretty good.
Brock was probably more upset given how much he liked Val in his shirtless volleyball scene.
How about this old throwback, Brock? You remember this?
I'm sorry. We just got to let you go because the kid is killing me there.
That's from back in the day for sure.
And you wondered why people picked on you?
Then, but not now. Right. I'm nice now.
I know.
I'm nice now. Yeah. Number two.
Kill with kindness.
Kill Bill. First one's better than the second one, but they're both pretty good. Bartender the other night at the Shambles had a Kill Bill t-shirt on with like the... what's the guy who's teaching her in the second one with his big, huge, long goatee?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty awesome.
You ever been up to the Catskill Mountains?
The Catskills?
Ooh, Catskill Mountains. Wow.
I actually have. That's good. The Catskills.
I think we all know what number one's going to be.
Well, I would hope so. I mean, if you know anything about this show, if you've listened for even a couple of days, you know how many times this band has found their way into the top five, right? Brock, you know what we're going to do, right?
Come on, Brock.
Foreigner.
Come on.
Oh, I mean, that's true.
You can do it. You can do it, Brock. You can do it.
What?
Killing in the name of.
Obviously, a little Rage Against the Machine to finish off a great day here on the Brock and Salk Show. Number one, kill of all time.
Ah, it's the best. That's the best.
Pretty good. I guess we got to get out of here. Make way for Bump and Stacy.
Silence is killing us there, bro.
Oh, sorry.
You don't like that?
I was looking at all the kills. There's so many towns in New York with kills in it.
Penalty
Catskills,
kill.
Kills, mountains, fresh kills in New York. Yeah. Interesting.
Dress to Kill. Hey, Kill Me Again. Did you say that? Did you say that movie?
What? Which
kill
one?
Kill Me Again, the movie?
I don't know that movie.
You ever read Kill a Mockingbird?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Of course.
A Time to Kill?
Of course. I read that, too. Yeah.
Oh, Smashing Pumpkins, a killer in me is a killer in you. We missed that.
Not in the name of the song, but fair. Yeah.
Good reference.
Send that
Jim Nagy tomorrow. All
right, we'll talk some football tomorrow with Jim, and we'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Stick around for Bump and Stacy. They're coming up next. Until then, Brock the Hay.
Barn.
See everybody.
See ya.
Get to the chopper!